Hi, everybody. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I'm the host of the Sports Psychology Hour, which is a radio show here in Kansas City. It airs every Sunday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And over the past few years, in addition to my show, which I've had on the air for 33 years, I've launched the Sports Psychology Hour now as a podcast and live stream. And I'd like to invite you to listen to my website, which is winnersunlimited.com, where you can listen to episodes of the show. Just click on the podcast tab, and you'll be able to do that. That's winnersunlimited.com. And as you know, we've been doing a lot of conversations with people all over the country about youth sports, about coaches, athletes, administrators, officials. And today I'm happy to be talking with John Ang, who's the executive director of the National Alliance for Youth Sports. I talked with his dad close to 25 years ago. We've did some work together, Dad Fred, who I really enjoyed working with. So, John, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Oh, it sounds great, Dr. Jacobs. Can't wait to talk about this. This is a great subject.
So, youth sports has undergone a gigantic change, and since I talked to your dad 20 years ago, I mean, it's a gigantic business now, more than it was before. I mean, you've got kids playing sports at 3 and 4 years of age. You've got leagues. You've got money has taken over youth sports, I think. That's just something I've talked about for quite a while. And your organization is really one of the first to really get involved with youth sports and helping athletes and coaches deal with things. So let's talk about it. I mean, what do you agree with that? Things have changed dramatically over the years, and now money sort of drives youth sports in a way.
You hit on one of the main factors in the change. I give presentations all the time, and one of the things I start off with is exactly this subject about the change, because it just gets people to be able to relate to why things, haven't got under control. I mean, we've been doing this for 40 years now, and you'd think we'd have a better grip on, behavior at sporting events, but the changes are drastic. And you just mentioned age. Age is a huge one. I'm 59. When I started youth sports, you didn't put on a uniform or playing anything organized till you're about 10 years old, if you were lucky. Maybe 8, maybe as early as 8 years old. But
If you were
really,
good, if you were good.
if you were good. And most of it was, sandlot and pickup games, which just don't exist in communities anymore. Kids just don't go down the street and, play in a sandlot. Somebody's gonna run them off the sandlot, or somebody's just gonna, say it's not safe, or whatever, for whatever reason. That's one. And you think about all of the, being a psychologist and being involved in youth sports, you can understand that the difference of watching an 8 and a 9 and 10 year old play as a parent versus playing your 3 year olds. I did a presentation 2 weeks ago, and they said in an organized setting in a parks and recreation, they have 18-month-old soccer. 18-month-old. Okay. I mean, my son didn't even start walking until he was 14 months old. So,
Yeah, we have here in Kansas City, there's a soccer company that has tournaments for 2 year olds.
yeah,
It's
tournaments.
absurd. It's absurd.
It's crazy. And then you think about the factors of the moms and dads sitting out there watching, this total different physical abilities. Forget about the mental capacity that the kids have at that age, not to mention the parents' mental capacity to watch a 2 or 3 year old go out there and fail versus a
That
10 year
you,
old,
excuse me, that you just hit something right on that. The parents' mental capacity to watch their 2 year old play a sport. Yeah. Like,
I talk to people all the time, and I say, especially baseball is a good example, because we basically put all the levels in this, in this big diamond, where they it's escaping me right now, where you have all field four fields connected, and it's T-ball on one side, then you get a coach pitch, and then you have the kids who have graduated out of coach pitch who are trying to throw strikes, and then you have the 11 and 12 year olds, where it finally starts to actually look like, baseball that we know. And the parents that are watching the 11 and 12 year olds now are just, on their phone, or maybe reading, they used to be reading the newspaper, but they're not really emotionally involved. Their kids have been playing for 5 or 6 years. They're there to support them and see them bat and those kinds of things. But when they're 3, 4, and 5 years old, you got mom and dad, grandparents, every kid in the family out there, and they're all screaming and yelling and just don't even know how to act yet. And again, it's because these little kids, yeah, they're way cuter, but they're also vulnerable, and it just brings out a totally different animal in the parents watching the age. I know you probably have something to add to that, but I was going to just kind of go through this list of changes. One of the other big one is, prior to 2008, when there were the financial crunch kind of changed the dynamic for a parks and rec that was overseeing youth sports. we estimated, we did some studies back then, but about 80% of recreational programs were run at the Parks and Rec level, meaning the Parks and Recs did the registration, they recruited the volunteers, they oversee the volunteers, and yeah, you played on their fields, but it was the, you know, for you, it's Kansas City youth soccer, Kansas City youth baseball run at the recreation department. Fields are owned by those municipal or, you know, county run organizations. Today, it's been a complete shift because those things are all farmed out now. So almost every youth sports organization that's running recreational sports now, and I say almost, it's about 80% on that level now, are volunteer-based, parent-run leagues that have just volunteers running it. And the only thing that the rec department does now is issue a permit. And hopefully, they oversee what's going on in those fields a little bit, but they're making sure they're well-maintained and there's no safety hazards and things like that. So you really have taken out any level of professionalism at all over what's going on. And we talk about, as an organization, and I know I'm going on and on about this, but I could go on for 2-3 hours.
No. You're making great sense here. I'll jump in a minute, but go ahead.
The one parallel that we always draw is if you drew a comparison of like dropping your kindergartner off for the first time at school, and you know, A, they don't want you in the school because they know you can't handle, you know, the emotional attachment to your child when they're 5 years old and you're dropping them off at kindergarten and have them actually, you know, go over their ABCs or things that you learned at home with your parents. But you're dropping them off with a teacher who maybe has a master's degree. In Florida, it's a requirement that they have elementary education has to have a master's degree. A lot of times the principal has a PhD, you know, he's a doctor or something. And then you have millions and millions of dollars into the school board and the person that's overseeing all the administration. They're not just in there to paint the walls and make sure that the desks are all in good shape. They're over there to make sure that that group of kids and that same age group is going to get the best experience that they possibly can get. And then you compare that to what we do for that first 5-year-old soccer practice and who you're dropping that child off to, who's overseeing that program, and you know, yeah. Really is kind of amazing when you think about it. Yeah, it's not exactly the same thing, but there are some real parallels there. So that's a huge change on who's actually overseeing and running youth sport programs.
You know, John, one of the things that is very close to my heart, and one of the things I talk about, it's been an impetus for my radio show, Sportsmanship, and I've talked about it forever. I've shared throughout my career, the experiences I went through with my sons, they're now 34 and almost 33, all the craziness I saw with the coaches and stuff that went on. And I think, and this has been one of my pet peeves with youth sports, there should be a requirement for sportsmanship training for coaches. And one of the things that I've talked about on my show extensively, because of all the crazy things that I hear, and being on the radio, I get calls from people tell me stuff that it's like, who is this person? I want to get your thought on this. I've come up with an idea that at youth sporting events, there should be a meeting, and most teams do this. They have a preseason meeting where they'll go over the rules and practice schedules and all that type of stuff. But I think they need to implement a sportsmanship component to that. And in that sportsmanship component, what I think they need to do is say, look, we're going to have a schedule every week, a different parent. And this is just my idea. It may not work, but some people said that it is working. But a different parent every week will sort of supervise, just observe the other parents. And here's the guidelines for sportsmanship for what you can do, what you can't do. You can't yell at the umpires or the referees. You can't cuss out your child. You can't, you know, start getting belligerent. You know, things like that, just get some specific guidelines. If a parent's doing that, the supervising parent then goes over to the coach, because the coach has to be the one who in the end has to be in charge. The coach will then call timeout, come over and say something to the parent who's out of control and say, look, here's your warning. If you keep this up, you're going to have to leave. And I think and each week it's a different parent in charge of that. I think if we start doing something like that, I think we're going to cut down on this craziness that we hear every week. And now, here we are, you know, getting into spring where all the outdoor sports are going to be happening, softball, baseball, yep. Everything's going to hit soccer, you know, everything's going to be going on outside. We're going to be hearing all this crazy stuff again with parents. There was a fight a couple weeks ago at a baseball game down in Texas. So we're going to hear this type of stuff. And I think if we have some type of guideline that could be taught across the board, I think that would be helpful. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I should a little remiss about not just kind of going over exactly what our organization does now. So we do training for the volunteers that are involved with youth sports. So parents are obviously included in that. You can get very specific with that training. We have a basic orientation. You mentioned at the beginning of the season, most people do that. We like to tell most people also leave it up to the volunteer. So you mentioned the head coach. So not only is that head coach now in charge of coaching the kids and fundamentals and dealing with the parents, now, you know, you're relying on him to come up with a great preseason meeting. So we pretty much have a video-based orientation that they can go through and watch. You can do it on a DVD as a group if you want, but that's very important. The organization that's overseeing sports, whether it's the Parks and Rec or that volunteer-based group, hopefully believes that there should be some element of training for the coaches. And of course, sportsmanship is definitely a part of that training, not only in the parent orientation, if you choose that program, but also for the coach education program and element. So it's how to coach the sport, how to coach the basic fundamentals. It's basic first aid and safety that you need to know if you're going to be out there on a field with kids. And then there's the element of just coaching youth sports and the psychology of coaching youth sports, something that you were involved with my dad 25 years ago and talking about and developing that whole concept of it. And that a lot of people seem to do now. But that element of it is all about the league saying, yes, we think that in addition to background screening, in addition to concussion training, the adults should go through some basic certification. And it's very easy. I mean, they can do it in 3 hours at home over the course of however long it takes them to get that done. But the other element that we've started on that you may not know about that we've been doing for a couple of years now is a certification for the youth sports professional that's involved to talk about exactly that, what you talked about, is different ideas, best practices sharing among people who are at Parks and Rec or any recreation agency, really, that are in charge of those fields. So they're the ones signing off on the permits that say exactly that. If you're not doing some sort of parent education, if you're not doing some sort of parent program, you shouldn't be able to get a permit for this league. If you're not doing volunteer coach training, you cannot get a permit. If you're not doing background screening, you can't get a permit. If you don't have a written philosophy for what the league is all about that is readily available to all the participants and parents, you can't get a permit. So it basically certifies them just like in any other profession. And it says, and again, going back to the element of drawing that parallel between the schools, at least now it'd be nice to know if you went to the Kansas City Parks and Rec Department that there's three or four people that are involved in youth sports. And not only did they get certified, but they keep their certification up because, you know, as you know, it changes every year. Every year there's a new thing that people need to know about. And now it's whether it's sudden cardiac arrest or how to use an AED or the importance of AEDs being out on the fields. Concussion has been a big one for a long time. Mental health issues, bullying, all those kinds of things that creep up. These people have to come and get a training, and hopefully we'll get you to come up and speak to these guys too, or these administrators too, because they all come in once a year, or they can get that training online. But the importance of that person in the community overseeing what's going on in those fields. So I loved the concept of what you're talking about as a very specific idea for parents. I the only thing that you said that I partially disagree with, I was when you said the parent had to go to the coach to get the coach to say, I say you empower that parent that week to be in charge. And if anybody doesn't like it, they can just not come to the games anymore. But that parent says, you go, you know, and, you know, maybe there's a little committee or something like that. But I love that idea. It's great.
Yeah. The reason I said the coach, because then you get the parents getting it, then you're going to have a fight with the parents.
Yeah,
that's why I say, you know, I mean, I hate it. It has to be somebody. So the coach is
he's a respected authority.
The kids are coaching the parents.
Yeah.
Because if it's a parent and there's a disagreement that they don't like each other, then that could cause even more. You know, the guy who's yelling and screaming then is going to turn to yell and scream at that other parent. And then boom. That's why I think if the coach calls timeout, comes over and confronts that adult, okay, that person's going to be embarrassed because of what they're doing and probably more than likely will turn back. You know, I mentioned I co-wrote this book with Jeff, Kansas City Royals Hall of Fame pitcher Jeff Montgomery, and USA Olympic Swim Hall of Fame coach Peter Malone, Just Let Him Play. And we talk in here all about this. And one of the key, in fact, one of my favorite chapter, I'll just open it up, is embracing failure can lead to fun. And part of that is the whole thing with, I think when you're dealing with parents, you know, parents go to these games, and I was one once. You want to see your son or daughter do well, but they're going to fail, and they're not going to do great. They're going to screw up, but that's okay. That's part of the learning process. Yeah. I mean, we all fail, we all screw up. The problem is you've got so youth sports now has gotten to the point, and in fact, John, one of the impetuses for me writing this book came about 8 years ago. There was an article in one of the national magazines about an AAU basketball tournament in Memphis, and the writer of the article brought his second grade son to watch the AAU basketball tournament and watch the second grade teams. And the coach of one of the fourth grade teams from New York, which lost in the quarterfinals, allowed this writer to observe everything. And in the locker room after the game, he screamed and yelled at these kids and said, "I'm going to coach you like 16-year-olds, not 10-year-olds. And the kids were crying, and he's screaming and yelling at them. I'm like, why would you do that? They've made it to the quarterfinals, semifinals, whatever it is. That's great. I mean, no one, only one. I always ask people, what's winning mean? Winning to me is going to have to do your best. And it's not about coming in first place. Yeah, somebody's going to come in first place. I'm in Kansas City. We won the Super Bowl here three times in the last few years after a 50-year drought.
Right.
All right. So I believe me, I, as a sports fan, as a Chiefs fan, and in addition to working with a bunch of Chiefs players privately over the years, I've got a Super Bowl jersey right here in my office. I've seen failure happen a lot. Okay. It's part of sports. And I think you learn more from that. And I think that's where, organizations like yours can help with that, with the training, like you're saying, getting coaches and parents to understand it's no one likes to lose. But we're all going to, only one team, one person is going to come in first place. But to me, a winner is someone who goes out and does their best. They don't have to come in first. And I think that's been one of the big issues we've got with youth sports now, is everybody wants to come in first. Everybody wants to win. And the fun is going out of it. My concern with youth sports is, and I'm going to be 70 years old this year, so I'm a lot older than you. When I grew up, just like you started saying, we go up to the grade school, which is, three houses up the street from my house. We play baseball, football. I had the wraparound drive. We just played till it got dark. There were no parents telling us what to do. We did that till about sixth grade. That's when some teams started getting, there was AAU baseball going on in sixth grade. I remember that. But there wasn't all this organized stuff going on, and fun was there. And what concerns me today for kids is play is going away. Kids aren't playing. They're participating. And get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would say, to me, the number one failure that we've done in progressing youth sports to where it is now, and I say progressing as in it's been going forward, that doesn't necessarily mean it's positive, right, is the fact that, with specialization and year-round activities, the pressure to, at 6 years old, say, you're going to be playing baseball in college, you need to only play baseball now, is that we've left so many kids behind that, at 8 years old, where do you start a sport now? Because somebody's going to talk you out of it. I tell this story that I actually had when, and this is almost 20 years ago, when my son was signing up for T-ball here in our local community. And, of course, I've been doing this for almost 40 years. The person didn't know who I was, but we go in to sign up for T-ball in the springtime, and the main administrator, the president of the league, is there at registration, and he hears that he hasn't played before. And he says, maybe your son should come back in the fall when we have our recreation program. This is our competitive league in the spring. And I'm just flabbergasted thinking, you're talking me out of signing up for T-ball with my 5-year-old because it's too competitive and it's not recreational based. That's kind of crazy, but that's where we are, that everything has gotten so much advanced and geared towards getting kids out of recreation and into a travel opportunity. Whereas before, we aspired to get on, it ended at when you got to the high school level and you chose the sport that you enjoyed the most, or that you were, the best at, and hopefully you could make that team, and if you didn't, there were still recreational opportunities to play. But it's totally changed now. So you have these kids that are just playing one thing. And I just think it's a shame that it's gotten to this.
Well, it's interesting you said that because when my oldest son, Jonathan, is now 34 and has a 6-month-old daughter, when he signed up for kindergarten, I got a call the day before kindergarten started from a dad who was organizing a soccer team. Said, we're, sign kids up to play. And I said, well, thanks, but, my son's not interested. He likes wiffle ball and running around. And this guy said, I don't know what you do for a living, but he goes, you obviously don't know much about youth sports because if he doesn't sign up to play now, he'll fall behind everybody else. And I said, you're right. You don't know what I do for a living, and he won't be playing for you. My son ended up playing soccer until his senior in high school. So the pressure to start at such younger ages and to specialize, we're seeing a tremendous. I just had physical therapy yesterday, and the physical therapist was telling me, I can't believe how many kids are coming in here now who are recovering from Tommy John surgery at age 12. We had three of them this week. And the specialization stuff was ridiculous. If you take Roger Federer and Alex Morgan, two of the greatest at tennis and soccer specifically, and read about their histories, they played multiple sports. So they're about 14 or 15 when they started to specialize. And this youth specialization stuff at 7 and 8 is absurd. Playing year round, basketball doesn't stop. I've got kids that play high school basketball. They start training in August. The season doesn't start till late October, but they've got training that they need to be at, even though it's not mandatory until they start in October. The season goes to March if they make it that far. Then their club plays, and they plays until high school starts again. I had a young lady in here a couple of years ago who was sitting in my office, said, Dr. Jacobs, I'm just tired. And she was going to be a senior. And I said, what's going on? She goes, I don't remember the last time I took a break. We figured out it had been 2 years since she'd taken 2 weeks off. So we encouraged her. I encouraged her. It was the beginning of August. I said, you know what? Her parents came in the next week, and I said, tell you what, let's come up to a decision about taking some time off. What would be a good amount of time? They agreed to 6 weeks because it was beginning of August. High school mandatory practice didn't start till October. She just needed a break. Well, 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from the high school coach cursing me out because she wasn't at practice, saying it's your fault and we're going to lose the championship because of you. Well, she ended up tearing her ACL, so she didn't even play. Got her full ride scholarship. The coach where she went to college honored it. But she said the best thing she did when she went back to practice was taking that time off. She goes, because it's fun again. I enjoy it. I lost the excitement because it's just nonstop practices.
That's the one thing we couldn't, when we were kids, we couldn't wait for that season to roll around to be able to play. And the other thing I would add to that is it's just not the kid needing a rest. It's the pressure from the parent because after 10 years of soccer or softball or whatever sport, that mom or dad, their social circle is now all the other parents in that group. So when the kid comes and says, I want to take a season off, instead of thinking about their child, they're thinking about what am I going to do? This is what we do. We go to parties, we go to all these things with all these people. Now we're not going to be involved. That's,
So, John,
so
so what do we
that's
do? What do you think, with your organization is at the forefront of training and organizing things. What do you think we need to do to get people to become more aware that the pressure, the problem as I see it today is there's tremendous pressure on parents to get their kids started at younger ages. And I don't think there's anything wrong in going out and learning to play a sport, but I have the problems with getting into these leagues and teams at 5 and 6 years of age. I think by the end of the research shows by kids are turning 11 and 12, they're burning out and they're quitting. So what do you think we need to do about all this?
Well, I think the number one thing is education in the community so that the people that fall back. So when a recreation professional comes to a parent and says, hey, here's why we shouldn't do these things, that they have actually some facts to back them up. They have a certification. They're just not, Dave, who's been running the baseball league for 10 years and signs off on these permits, but they actually have some, a backing of an organization or a group. We call them a CYSA. So it's a certified youth sport administrators group. And there's 5,000 of them that are active right now that come together and say, yeah, these things need to happen. They created a document called the National Standards for Youth Sports that kind of lay these things out that say this is how often kids that are 7 and 8 should practice a week, and should they travel? Should they travel out of state? Should they be playing competitive? Should they even be keeping score at certain ages? They've come up with those got list of guidelines. So to have that helps to be able to talk some sense into the parents. But I don't know. I think it's such a powerful thing, and it's turned into, as multi-billion dollar sports in itself, whether it's registration or equipment and everything that goes with it. So it's going to take a lot, but I think most parents end up learning the hard way and then they don't have kids anymore. That's the reality.
And the other side is the amount of money they spend with all the sports training. If they put it into the educational part, would probably pay off better for them in terms of academic scholarships versus athletic scholarships when they go on.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, yep, I agree.
Well, I think we've hit on something here, and you and I can talk more, you know, about this as we move on, but I really appreciate you coming on the show today. If people want to get a hold of you, how can they reach you? What's the best way to get in contact with you, John?
Well, I would say, for one, NAYS.org is our website. Really easy to remember, NAYS, National Alliance for Youth Sports.org. My email is jeng@NAYS.org. Anybody reach out to me. Any questions, we can put you in touch with, you know, somebody from our staff to show a demo of what we do and how we can help. But number one, I always am promoting, if you walk up to a Parks and Rec person that's overseeing youth sports, ask them if they have a certification, because then they're going to go back to their boss and say, why, what is this certification? Should I get certified? And that's something that we really, really believe strongly in.
Well, your organization is great. Like I said, I've been aware, you know, your dad years ago when he was running it, and appreciate what you're doing. So thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk more later.
Thanks. Great to see you.
Okay. You know, if you've enjoyed our show, this conversation, visit my website, which is winnersunlimited.com. You can listen to all kinds of episodes, podcasts I've had for a long time. That's winnersunlimited.com. I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew J.